Thank you. It is now 8:39, and we are going to call this meeting to order on October 18th. Please note that we have our Attorney General present, Mark Harris. I'd just like to remind everyone to either mute or turn off all of your electronic devices. And then I would like to begin by reading the mission statement of the Arizona State Veterinary Board. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. Now I'd like to ask Dr. James to do our roll call.
Dr. Byrne? Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Mr. Lougheed?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson is absent. And Dr. Wright? Also absent, not on the phone?
Nope, not on the phone.
Okay. So
okay.
We have quorum.
Great, thanks. So we are going to start on section number 2, which is our initial investigative review and action. And the first one we are taking is number 7-23-134 in regards to Jennifer Johnson, VMD. And Tracy, if you can read the case summary for us.
You said Jennifer Johnson?
Yeah, 134.
I thought we were doing 124, so I apologize for that.
Oh, I was like, let me make sure I have it. Yes, wait. Yes, I apologize. Thank you, Tracy.
124?
So, number 5, 23, 124.
Okay.
So, hold on. Start that over again.
Thank you.
So we are on number 5, 23-124 in regards to Gurit Sandhu, DBM.
Thank you. Case 23-124, the complainant is Richard Tracy, the respondent is Gurit Sandhu, DBM. On September 6, 2022, Frankie, a 4-plus-year-old male French Bulldog, was presented to respondent due to cloudiness in the left eye. Respondent advised that he did not have the equipment to check for glaucoma and suggested referral to an ophthalmologist. Complainant wanted respondent to evaluate the eye and begin treatment while he scheduled an appointment with an eye specialist. Fluorescein stain revealed uptake in the left cornea, thus respondent provided treatment for possible corneal ulcer. Respondent could not rule out other issues and provided information for an ophthalmologist. On September 12, 2022, respondent stated that at the recheck appointment, he advised complainant to get an appointment with a specialist. On September 15, 2022, the dog was seen at Eye Care for Animals, where he was diagnosed with glaucoma. Complainant was advised that the dog had lost sight in the left eye. Eye enucleation was discussed. On February 22, 2023, the dog's left eye was enucleated by the eye specialist. Complainant contends that respondent did not refer him to an ophthalmologist timely, and the dog was misdiagnosed, which caused the dog to lose the left eye. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find errors 32.232 number 11, gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death, that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles or practices. Respondent failed to emphasize the need for the dog to have the pressure checked in the eye, in the left eye, by an emergency facility, primary care veterinarian, or specialist. Respondent did not have the equipment to check the dog's eye pressure. And ARS 3222-3220, performing veterinary services without adequate equipment, considering the type of veterinary services being provided. ARS 3222-3221, failure to maintain adequate records of veterinary services provided. Respondents' medical records were illegible. And 3222-3221, as it relates to R 311-502-L4 and L9, which are medical record keeping issues. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. And we have the complainant here, and we also have Mr. Stoll.
I have a statement.
A statement? Okay, so we will start with you, Dave.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to address you on behalf of Dr. Sandu, who's been out of the country and could not be here today. With regard to the investigative committee's recommendations, we respectfully disagree with the committee's suggestion that there were any violations of the Practice Act in this case. First and foremost, Dr. Sandu was not deficient in any way with respect to his referral of the owner to a specialist. It was clearly discussed and noted repeatedly in the medical record beginning on the very first visit on September 6, 2022. In the plan section for the record on that day, it clearly states, quote unquote, referred to eye specialist. Later in the record for that day, Dr. Sandu noted, and I quote, discussed with the owner to go to eye specialist. Finally, the very last entry in the medical record for that day, it says that Dr. Sandu personally gave the owner the specialist's card so that the owner could go to the specialist. He handed him the card and told him that he needed to go there. Dr. Sandu also explained on that very first day that one of the reasons why the owner needed to go to the specialist was because he did not presently have equipment on site to complete his examination and diagnosis of the dog. The next visit was on September 12th. That was an appointment just to refill the serum eye drops. But as is noted in the medical record for that day, Dr. Sandu again told the owner, and I quote, advised again to go to eye specialist even though it looks better. Not to take any chances with the eye. So even though the dog was showing improvement, Dr. Sandu again told them, the owner, that he needed to go to the specialist and assumed that he would go to the specialist. When the owner didn't and called the next day to report that the dog was doing worse, here's what Dr. Sandu not only told the owner but noted in the medical record. Quote unquote, again, advised to go to eye specialist ASAP. It was emphatically told to the owner not just to go, but to go as soon as possible. So despite the fact that Dr. Sandu repeatedly told the owner to go to a specialist during each and every visit and in every communication conversation he had with the owner, and also gave the owner the card for the specialist, somehow the committee felt that Dr. Sandu may have been, quote unquote, grossly negligent for failing to emphasize the need to go to a specialist. I question what more he could have done, what more he could have said. You can't do much more than say, go ASAP. And that is about as emphatic as you can get. Next, the committee expressed a concern that a second stain test wasn't offered, and the results of the first test were not in the medical record. Following the investigative committee's meeting, Dr. Sandu found an estimate that was inadvertently omitted from his original response. That estimate was recently submitted through Tracy and confirms that a second stain test was in fact offered and declined by the owner. As for the results of the first test, they were clearly noted in the medical record for September 6, 2022. The record states, quote unquote, stain both eyes, very positive, very bad positive stain. The test was positive. That was a test result, and it is in the medical record along with Dr. Sandu's presumptive diagnoses from the test results of a possible corneal ulcer, left side, or glaucoma. It's all in the record, and therefore there is no basis for a violation of R3 or ARS 3222321 as it relates to R311502 for failing to record the results of the stain test and the results of the eye exam. Next, with regard to the proposed violation for not having adequate equipment, the practice did have and regularly maintained a tonometer on site, but on the date of this appointment, it had broken and was out being serviced. That's why Dr. Sandu was so emphatic about referring the owner to an eye specialist who he knew would have the proper equipment. Since this complaint was filed, Dr. Sandu has confirmed that there is currently a fully operational tonometer at the premises. Also, following the September 12, 2023 meeting, Dr. Sandu randomly surveyed a number of veterinary practices and less than half of them had tonometers on site. So we question whether it is in fact standard of care to have one or not. But again, this is not a situation where the subject equipment was not regularly kept on site. It was just out for repair on the date that the owner presented his dog. Finally, with regard to the proposed violation of 3222-3221, which relates to an alleged failure to adequately maintain medical records, the contents of Dr. Sandu's medical records are complete. Admittedly, his handwriting is difficult to read. But all the essential required information is in there in his handwriting. They contain everything that is statutorily required. Because his handwriting is difficult to read, that's one of the reasons that they're now transitioning to electronic computerized medical records. Having addressed the concerns expressed by the committee, we respectfully ask that the complaint be dismissed with no violation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stoll. We have the complainant, Richard Tracy, here as well. If you would like to come forward.
Please.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. I don't know that the follow-up information that was just given is accurate. I've never really seen much of that, but I'm a dog guy. I've got two dogs. I'm not Frenchie, he's cool and fun and all, but I've got a 15-year-old street stray that's got two ankle surgeries and hobbles around like a person with a heel to toe. Go walks every day with him. I'm that guy with hair in his car, hair in his living room, hair on his clothes, hair in his bed. They sleep in the bed, eat off a fork. I'm that guy. I take a lot of time and energy in my day-to-days with them and myself as well. I'm very disciplined. I think this is more than just a case of, oh, my handwriting's bad, or there's miscommunication. It's much more than that. This I don't know if you all, I got the recordings. You had a couple recordings I've submitted. A little tough to hear at times, but luckily I had those. One was where I confronted the doctor originally. I apologize for some of the words in there towards the end, but it discusses his plan, or what his plan was with the corneal ulcer or something. And there's a big difference between corneal ulcer and glaucoma, I found out since then. Glaucoma is an instantly, you know, small window, 6 to 10 hours, maybe 12 hours to get some glycerin or other means to reduce the swelling so the eye doesn't get damaged completely. If in any way, shape, or form, he expressed to me that I was to go somewhere else, I would have walked out of there, left the card, left money, probably jogged, and gone wherever I needed to go. If it was impressed to me that it needed to be done, you know, there's a lot of trust involved when you go to medical personnel for anything. Like, I'm not a doctor. I don't fix my own transmission either. I take what people tell me, and that's what I need to do. It's not even that first conversation of what he did or didn't do. I think the second recording with the office manager speaks volumes much clearer to how this was approached by the doctor. In that she presented to me all of the information she had. She had all the recordings for that office. She said all of them, quote. She said, these are all that I have. I listened to them all, I recorded them all. And I asked her at the end what happened to the call on Monday where I actually had gotten the glaucoma diagnosis and came back to speak with them. It was a 15-minute or so conversation, nowhere to be found. She called the doctor in front of me, and he hemmed and hawed and tried to say he called from his cell phone, and he didn't. I actually have the hard copies of my bill, not just a nice spreadsheet that I gave you all. Hard copies, line by line, date, in and out, and length of time. I think his office, when she stated that she had no way to do it, but I think the office itself somehow, some way, lost 6 of 19 phone calls. Where apparently in those calls he's trying to impress upon me the importance of going somewhere, but I don't see why those calls should not be there if they stand to benefit him in any way, shape, or form. They don't. Following up through some of that, it wasn't just the missing phone calls. I think it was also the approach of trying to leverage somebody with money. And I personally, you know, didn't really care about the remaining $250 that he was gonna give back to me. They tried to get me to sign a release. They tried to coerce me and say I couldn't give my money if I didn't sign a release that was threatening a false accusation of assault. There's no record of assault, there's nothing that was said. In that recording, I said what I should do, but I'm a grown man and I abide by laws, and what I should do and what I am going to do are markedly different things. So they tried to leverage that to give me a sign or release saying that everything was all fine and dandy, and it's not. Like, that's just, it goes against even little kids' rules. You don't lie, you don't cheat, you don't steal, and if you make a mistake, you just say you make a mistake. And that's not what happened here. You dragged this out. I just hope that it's something that doesn't happen with other people. I don't know what else to add to all that, other than it was just wrong. You know, he didn't give me the opportunity to leave there and go somewhere in a timely manner. And upon further digging into this whole glaucoma thing, it's not that hard. It's not that hard to get some readings, get some treatment, and potentially keep an eye. It carried a lot of stress with me. Like I said, I'm pretty disciplined. I'm a gym guy. I'm not ecstatic about it, but I get there. You know, I get 4 days a week or so. But when this all took place, yeah, I continued the gym. I didn't eat. I drank nice amounts. To the point where in November, this happened in September, late November, I actually had to go to a doctor. The therapist was nice. I've gone to her before. She had three or four sessions to make sure I didn't do anything that I shouldn't. But the hormone doctor was the point where he was going to put me on shots and medicine because I wasn't functioning. My distress levels were such that I don't know how bald it is in this world, but my testosterone was half what it was. I have blood tests. It was half of what it was when I started. And I said, listen, just let me try to get my head on straight. Let me figure this out. I worked through it. I finally got Frankie's eye taken out. I don't know if anybody's seen this. I don't know if it made it to you. This is Frankie. You guys can pass that around. You can hold it. Something good. But once I finally got the eye inoculated, I got my act together and came back around and got my test back in line, and you know, I doubled my test, which is what helps a grown man function in emotional and irrational manners, and it was pretty rough. That's a lot to go through. You know, is he gonna make it? Sure. Should he have to make it with one eye? No, he shouldn't. I wanted to bring him here, but I don't want to get told no at the front because that's what happens a lot. Because he's with me everywhere. I hope that either this keeps him from doing it more, or people in a situation where they aren't as inclined to feel like something's not quite right, and make recordings and pay attention and do some research on my phone and the rest. Like, I can't imagine the number of people he's run through like that. Like, I could very easily just walked out of there with no recordings, no notes, no nothing, and said, yeah, you know, it's too bad my dog's blind. Well, it shouldn't have to be that way. I don't know if there are any holes in what you all had presented to you previously or any questions for me, but I'd be more than happy to answer anything you have any questions about at this time, because I'm all done.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Good step back for now. And Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this one.
Okay, thank you. This case really boils down to this referral to an ophthalmologist. The respondent, you know, accepted the patient, began treatment, and referred to an ophthalmologist. But I believe, especially when we're looking at a potential glaucoma, an ophthalmologist is not what was needed at that time. An eye pressure reading is what was needed. That doesn't require an ophthalmologist. All you need is a clinic with a tonometer. That could be an emergency clinic, it could be the clinic down the road. You just need some pressures. Then, if the pressures are found to be high and you're concerned with glaucoma, then possibly a referral to an ophthalmologist, or some practitioners will treat glaucoma on their own. But the point is that things need to happen quickly with glaucoma because of the damage that can occur to the eye if the pressures remain high. So we need to bring them down, and we need to bring them down fast. So if we look at the communications between the respondent and the complainant on that first visit, there was a, well, this is an eye, so I may need to send you to an ophthalmologist, but let's go ahead and do what we can. We don't have a tonometer. And found the corneal ulcer and went that route. Prescribed medications to go home. And then we also have a recheck. For the ulcer part, we should have had a recheck for the ulcer, but apparently this recheck was nothing more than getting more medication. I didn't, in reading the material, did not feel the respondent express the urgency for treatment for glaucoma. Yes, this is an eye. Eyes are critical. You may need to go to an ophthalmologist, but not, hey, this could be glaucoma. We need a pressure, we need it now, and we need to get going on this. I don't believe that was from the material, and the audio was conferred to the complainant. As to the records, yes, they are not readable, but if you go through them, you can decipher the records. A bigger point is the records in many places are inadequate. When you do a corneal ulcer, you need to say more than it's positive, because a corneal ulcer can be minor and it can be major, and we need to know what we're dealing with. And a lot of veterinarians, myself included, will make a drawing. Here's what it is. Here's what it looks like. So then on the recheck, you know, is it getting bigger? Is it getting smaller? And you describe as best you can the depth of it. Does it appear infected? None of these things are in the record. All it is positive. I think communication was incomplete in regards to explaining the disorders to the owner. There weren't any written instructions. I know there's no requirement for that in an outpatient, but there were none. And so that's my main concerns with the case, is this shielding by saying, I said go to an ophthalmologist. I said go to an ophthalmologist. And as I've explained, I don't think that was sufficient in this point, in this case. So I'm prepared to make a motion. Do we have any more, anybody have any input before I do that?
No, I mean, I agree with you on, it wasn't stressed as to the medical emergency need for referral, at least from what I can decipher. What I would say though is, it's kind of a tough line sometimes in medicine, because if you're a doctor that doesn't see eyes regularly, right? Say you're a vaccine clinic doctor and you don't see them, you just refer. You just don't even touch it because you don't know. And in this case, he did do it. If he had just said no from the beginning, I don't have the equipment, I'm gonna say no, I can't do it justice, we wouldn't be here. But I think what he did was he tried to help, mm-hmm. and got himself into a position that he probably doesn't have the equipment or necessarily the knowledge to handle that type of a case. And so, you know, I think it's hard, because I think when I look at it and I, you know, look at the investigative committee and gross negligence, I'm like, is it gross negligence if you referred and you just didn't stress it enough? Or is that more professionally acceptable procedures? You didn't do what you should have done, which is not touch this case in the beginning, right? And so I kind of struggle with, yes, I think there's a violation. I'm just not sure exactly where it falls. And I didn't understand the investigative committees not having the equipment, because I agree with what was said. I think there are a lot of practices out there that don't have tokens.
So can I ask then on that, if you don't have that equipment and someone is scheduling an appointment for cloudy eye, you should still take that appointment on, because you could potentially still discover whatever the issue is without that equipment? Or should they have said, because we don't have that equipment at the moment, maybe we should not?
I mean, I think it depends. I don't think I would find him in violation of taking the case. But if he doesn't have the equipment and doesn't have the knowledge to know this, it could be a medical emergency, and to stress the need for referral to get that information. And then it's like, if you sense that that's what's going on before you even take the case, why not just send it somewhere that has it, right? So I don't necessarily know that I could say that I would find that a violation. I just feel like in this case, there might be both a, we didn't have the equipment, but we also didn't have the knowledge enough to stress that this needed to go somewhere within 12 hours. He knew it needed to go somewhere, and he knew it could be glaucoma. He has it in his record. But to really stress, and it's hard because we weren't there, so we don't really know. But I sense from everything we have that that was not said as this is an emergency.
Yeah.
So do you think there are more questions to be had from the doctor, or do you think that everything?
I don't know what else we might be able to get from the doctor, although I have no problem with moving this to informal if a general feeling is there are more questions that we need from the doctor. If that's the feeling, I'm open to that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that there's anything we're gonna gain from that. We had a very nice statement that kind of stated his position, which was very helpful. So I don't know that we'll get anything else. I guess when I look at, yes, there's the medical records violations, those are there. And then I look at gross negligence versus professionally acceptable procedures. I could go either way on that. And then the second one, the 3222, 3220 for the lack of equipment kind of seems redundant with what you're gonna do in gross negligence, because not every clinic has that equipment, nor is it a required piece of equipment. So to call it out that one, you didn't have it and you didn't do it right and it's gross negligence, and then to say, oh, by the way, I'm also gonna find this violation for not having the equipment, just seems, it doesn't seem like the right, it seems like it's duplicative.
I mean, and Tone Pens, if you've ever worked with the current Tone Pens, the digital ones, those things are so finicky, you know? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you can't get a calibration, you can't get a calibration, you can't get it. Then you finally get it, you take the test, and then you go to the next patient, you can't get it. So you have to send them off for service every once in a while, right? So, I mean, legitimately things happen, and most practices do not cover the expense of owning two of those. They are expensive. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, either you didn't have the equipment or you didn't make a recommendation, why would you? It's not bold, you know? I mean, if you know your equipment isn't working, which he knew, then you have to make the, this is an emergency, you've got to get this looked at now.
Yeah.
Evaluated for pressures.
And during the audio, it was very unclear to me about why the equipment wasn't there. Today we heard that it was out being serviced. We didn't hear that in the investigative committee at all. It was like, I'm not sure whether we have one. I think we did at one time.
Yeah, that's interesting. But at the same time, I've also worked with doctors that really don't know where it's at. And then after the fact, especially if you're being asked that, you go to your team and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Oh, it was out. Oh, great, thanks.
That's why I haven't seen it in a month.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, and again, not something that doctors are always aware of. I get that because I'm in that role a lot, you know, where they don't know.
Sure.
So yes, you hear that, but at the same time, it may not be completely reasonable that he didn't know at the time and asked later.
The problem is not being able to get a pressure. I agree. Maybe it shouldn't have even come in the door. This is an eye. Maybe it shouldn't have even made an appointment.
But what if they couldn't get in anywhere else, and then they refused to
then
see
it's like, that's your question for that appointment. Yeah.
That's fine. Right. But then it should have been, we need to go somewhere. We need a pressure.
As the layperson, I would have had no idea that something like glaucoma in a pet's eye, if not addressed within literally less than 24 hours, is potentially detrimental.
That's right. And so that's
no idea.
Eyes are always urgent.
This is not one of those cases where, well, it's not a problem that we didn't have this thing working today. It's a problem if you're talking about glaucoma.
Okay.
Because as we see exactly what happened. That's not to say the treatment would have been successful. That's
right. Okay.
But the pet did not get the opportunity to be treated.
And we don't know how long it had been going on before it ever
exactly.
came in.
There's
a lot of things that could have impacted the recovery of this eye if it was going to recover.
And there's also, well, we haven't discussed this, concern for the other eye. I've got glaucoma here, and we lost this eye. We better make sure that we have assessed the pressures in the other eye. Okay. That's the other issue about glaucoma. Yeah, sometimes you lose an eye. You don't want to lose both eyes. And I think the gonioscopy, where they look at the filtration angle, I believe it was abnormal in the other eye. So that's another reason. Now you got potential to lose both eyes. So that's the critical nature of this is a critical thing. We need to do something now, and I don't think that happens. So I would make a motion to offer a consent agreement and accept the findings of fact. I would make a motion first to accept the findings of fact.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the investigative committee's findings of fact. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, and continuing, I would make a motion in the laws. I'm thinking about an addition under 32.22.32.12, R311.501.1, under professionally accepted procedures, respondent failed to provide adequate instructions and possible outcomes of the ocular disorders that they were dealing with. That's the communication issue there. So I would add that. And from our discussion today, I would strike the ARS 32.22.32.20, performing veterinary services without adequate equipment. I would strike that one.
Okay.
And add the aforementioned.
So you do professionally acceptable procedures, lack of professionally acceptable procedures for the communication issues, and continue with gross negligence for the treatment.
Yes.
And then continue with the medical records.
Yes, I think the not being able to read them bothers me, but if you struggle through it, you can do it. But the inadequacies in the record to treat an ophthalmology case. Descriptions.
Is that something that you could see going under? Because like, drawing a picture of the eye and having the description of the actual ulcer itself isn't laid out specifically in statutes. So is it the lack of documentation is just an acceptable procedure for seeing an eye case? You need to have this documented so that another doctor could follow it if they needed to, right?
Or yourself.
Or yourself, because we don't remember everything. But like, does that fall under professionally acceptable procedures in this case?
I would
versus
say
a specific medical records violation?
I would agree with the IC in that case.
Okay.
Yes, it does. So I would make a motion to offer a CA and accept the conclusions of law as modified.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I just would like that. I'll second, and I have a question.
Sure.
So we're keeping in the part as it relates to medical records?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to clarify.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay.
For the gross negligence.
Okay. Thank you.
So this is the point where we will ask for the prior violation.
Yes, there are priors. let's see here. In 2010, Dr. Sande was found in violation of ARS 3222, 3212, as it relates to R311502J2. He was placed on probation for 1 year and was required to do 4 hours of continuing education and medical record keeping at the emergency animal clinic and undergo random premises inspections within the probationary period. 2016, he was found in violation for failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures with respect to interpretation of a dog's radiographs and communicating the dog's primary issue with the pet owner. Placed on probation for 1 year, required to do 6 hours of total CE plus a $200 civil penalty. Those 6 hours included radiology and communication. In 2019, he was found in violation for failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures and the treatment of a parvo pet using steroids and Medicam concurrently and not continually monitoring the dog and sending the dog home that had declined since the previous exam, and the pet owner was not made aware of the dog's condition and no other recommendations were given for treatment. He was placed on probation for 1 year, had to do 4 hours of continuing education, 2 in parvo treatment and 2 in pain management, and had to pay a $750 civil penalty. And in 2019, he was found in violation of failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures for using corticosteroids steroids and NSAIDs concurrently without clear clinical justification and without clearly communicating potential adverse effects with the pet owner. He was placed on probation for 1 year in order to do 2 hours in communication and 2 hours in IVDD. And that is what I have.
Okay. So I would make a motion to offer the consent agreement to include a probation of 1 year to obtain 4 hours in ophthalmology, 2 hours in client communication, and a civil penalty of $1,000.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? We do roll call on this one. Okay, consent agreement.
Ms. Cregan?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Logie?
Nay.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Aye, Seth.
Thank you. Dr. Nosley, members of the board, if we could have one more motion, if not signed, to write in for an informal.
Right, if not signed within 30 days, then we move to an informal.
Second.
Thank you.
Motion and a second, and let's do roll call again on that then.
Ms. Greger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Logie?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
And Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Motion passes. Okay. Thank you for being here today. We are moving on now to number 8, 23-135, in regards to Benjamin Merkel, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read us the summary.
This 23-135, the complainant is Spencer Platt, the respondent is Benjamin Merkel, DVM. On January 24, 2023, Tink, a 5-month-old female border collie, was presented to White Mountain Animal Hospital with a fractured left rear limb. Respondent's associate, Dr. Evans, discussed treatment options with complainant. The dog stayed overnight, so a splint could be placed on the following day. On January 25th, 2023, respondent sedated the dog and placed a Robert Jones bandage per Dr. Evans' direction. The dog was discharged later that day with carprofen and instructions for cage rest and to recheck in 10 days. On February 3rd, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent due to complainant noting the dog chewing on the bandage and the left rear paw. Complainant was concerned the bandage was on too tight. Upon exam, respondent removed the bandage. It was noted that the dog had mutilated the toes and there was a lesion on the dorsal aspect of the tarsal joint. Respondent expressed concern with possible joint infection and that the dog had not been properly confined. Radiographs were performed, the wounds were cleaned, antibiotics were administered, and the leg was rebandaged. The dog was discharged with cephalexin and gabapentin. On February 8th, 2023, the dog was presented to Blue Ridge Pet Clinic for a second opinion. Dr. Burke removed the splint and noted that the dog's toes were necrotic and cold. Amputation was recommended due to the loss of blood flow up to the foot. Complainant agreed. And the committee concluded that a possible violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board found ARS 3220-3212 as it relates to R311-5011-1 for failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures by failing to communicate with the pet owner to verify the non-surgical treatment plan. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-1 with Dr. McCormick opposed.
Great. Thank you, Tracy. We have the respondent present, not the complainant. So, Dr. Merkel, if you are here and would like to come forward.
Unless you have questions for me, I don't know what else I could possibly do at this time.
Okay.
Okay.
And then, Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this.
Okay. In this case, the first point is that a modified Robert Jones bandage is not an acceptable method to stabilize a femoral fracture. And this is not disputed by the respondent. He agrees. The question involves, he was instructed to do that by another doctor, so he went ahead and did it without any communication with the doctor or the client or the owner. The fracture itself is what's called a Salter-Harris fracture. That requires rigid internal fixation to be successful. It's also a fracture involving the growth plate in a dog, in a growing dog. That also necessitates rigid internal fixation. This was never discussed by the respondent, and only any kind of surgery was only brought up by the initial vet, complainant to the initial vet. So there was zero discussion prior to putting the bandage on with the respondent and the complainant. The general rule for splints, casts, Robert Jones bandages is to immobilize the joint above and below the fracture, nearly impossible to do with a femoral fracture. Nearly because I say there are some cases where you can get away with splinting over the or up to and including the hip using something called a Thomas splint. I'm really dating myself here, but they do work. You know, ever seen a Thomas splint? Okay. Anyway, the post-procedure radiograph shows that the proximal edge of the bandage only about a third, or maybe if you count the tape at the top, halfway up the femur. What happens is this creates a weighted pendulum on the fracture, which, so the bandage, not only is it inadequate, it contributes to the destabilization of the fracture. I had two, listening to the audio, I had two concerning issues that was brought up at the investigative committee. One, the respondent initially referred to the fracture as being a tibia fibula fracture and then corrected himself. And secondly, he got an appropriate size splint out of a box. Well, there's no splint on this dog at all. It's all soft tissue bandage. So I got confused there and was questioning, well, how much do we really remember about this? But the crux of the matter, I think, in this case, is the descriptions and photos of the patient's leg show there was pressure necrosis occurring from the tarsus of the ankle distally. Pressure necrosis is when you lose circulation. And if you have a strangulation of a limb, that would do it. But another reason is bandage material that compresses to the point where circulation is cut off and we have pressure necrosis occurring. And I believe this was occurring, and I can't come up with another explanation for it to occur other than the bandage was too tight, if you will. And I have concerns about the REACH Act, which wasn't really addressed in the investigative committee. The respondent didn't describe pressure necrosis, but more bandage soreness or irritation and this type of thing. But he did have concerns for the joint being infected. So I got a little confused. How would the joint be infected? This injury was not an open injury. So I wondered why he suspected the joint might be infected, but at the same time didn't think the skin lesions were pressure necrosis. The other problem I had with the recheck, a recheck was set for 2 weeks. So if you have a compromised tissue, you don't wait 2 weeks. Some of those bandage should be changed daily to see what's going on, because of what happens is what happened. The limb continued to die, and I think that's an appropriate term for what happened below this dog's ankle. The respondent gave a steroid injection. I believe that was improper. With the condition of the skin and the respondent's concern for infection. Now, we used antibiotics judiciously, correct. But the steroid injection at that point concerns me also. Then the issue of the pet being too active and not properly restrained. Was the confinement not proper for this particular dog? Sometimes we can't put them in a crate and we put them in a small room, or we might tie them to a table. We might confine them to our truck. It doesn't sound ideal, but it's confinement. The animal's not running around loose. So to say that the, first of all, when we have bleeding through the bandage and foul odor and chewing at it and pressure necrosis continuing as was then without question going on when the next veterinarian saw the case. Pressure necrosis is not, I can't find a way for that to be blamed on activity. So in this case, I would not follow the recommendation of the investigative committee. Instead, I would again offer a consent agreement and find a violation under ARS 32-22-32-11, malpractice, gross negligence, for an improper improper treatment plan, improper application of a bandage, and an improper follow-up plan and care, all leading to the patient's leg having to be amputated. So that would be my motion, and I'll make a motion to accept the findings of fact.
Second.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Then under this CA, I would make a motion to accept the conclusions of law as modified here.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second to accept the conclusions of law. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Okay. At this point, I would ask for any prior violations.
Do you accept the findings of fact? Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
You did that?
I did.
There's no previous history.
Okay, thank you. With that, under the consent agreement, I would make a motion to include probation for 1 year to obtain 4 hours in fracture management and no civil penalty.
Okay. Okay, and then not signed?
And if not signed, yeah, within 30 days, move to inform.
Okay.
Second.
A motion and a second. Let's go ahead and do roll call.
Ms. Greger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lovey?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
And Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you for being here.